It's the Empowerment Perspective Radio Show, hosted by Demiso Josie, Kareem Spence, and Miss Stacey Sanderson Dick. Stay empowered. Stay empowered.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Empowerment Perspective Radio Show. I go by the name of Demiso Josie alongside
Stacey Sanderson Dick.
We are missing Mr. Petty.
Extra petty from me and you today, then.
I think he's being petty by staying home right now.
I don't know.
I think what happened was that last show, the women tore him up, especially Rosie. I think he's still a little traumatized by it.
Maybe a little.
No, I don't know. But now he had something he had to do today, so we're missing out on Mr. Petty. But we will make sure we step up the pettiness on this show, right? So on today's episode, we're going to be talking specifically about sports and student athletes. School's right around the corner. I'm sure football camps and stuff are about to open up or maybe already have started to do so. So in the building today, we got a student athlete. We have a basketball coach in the building. And a good friend of mine, he was on a podcast previously on mental health, Mr. Thamon Wright. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. Listen, your show actually had the highest downloads of all of our shows, the mental health one.
Oh, so, my God. Awesome.
I don't know if it was because of your personality or just was the topic. I don't know what it was, but for some reason, people liked that particular
episode. I'll pat myself on the back.
I'm going to give you credit for that one.
Thank you.
So we got some things coming up on August 18th. The Empowerment Perspective Group will be speaking at the Youth Empowerment Conference. And that conference takes place at the Atlantic County Community College at 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's $15 per youth. The ages are 12 to 17. So myself and Mr. Petty will have two separate sessions on there. Me specifically, I'm talking about So You Want to Go Pro. So it's going to take a little bit of a sports and life story, like, you know, combination presentation for that. We also have Mr. Spence talking about what's your why. So one of the biggest things that we talk about on our show all the time is developing a why, and that allows us to push through certain things. What is your why, Stacey? Like, why are you still here on this particular radio show?
Because you let me hang along a little bit longer than probably I should have. my why is because I want to do bigger things for kids and the kids out there that are struggling. Mm-hmm. But my kids are my why for everything. So I think I need to lead by example. If I want to raise decent kids, go out there and make a difference, it's got to start with me.
Makes sense. Now, you were down the shore.
That's the voice. Yeah, screaming at the kids in the ocean. And yeah.
I thought you were still screaming about the Super Bowl because you got your Eagle shirt on right now.
Camp started. I'm ready.
You're ready to roll. So we also have our back-to-school fundraiser. We want to talk a little bit about that.
We have the not GoFundMe. Sign Up Genius is ready, almost to go, so I'll publish that maybe today. We're hoping to collect as many school supplies as we can to get kids ready for the first day of school, and I think it's really important that all kids start on the same starting line. Some kids don't come prepared. Mm-hmm. That anxiety is already in them to come in without having their stuff almost quits from day one, I think, a little bit.
Gotcha. And don't forget, Boscos is still having their Christmas in July fundraiser down there, food drive. So if you have non-perishable items, make sure you drop them off down there at the Cumberland Mall. So we have a segment called Take It Personal. I have a Take It Personal story I need to share real quick. For those who follow me, and there's news about me that I got a new job. I'm not going to tell what that job is or where it is. I'm not going to do that yet, but I did have a new job. But I went through this process of this interview, a bunch of interviews. I've been on so many interviews, and I'm tired of talking to people at this particular point in time. So at the end of it, I go through 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds, and then I'm waiting, and you wait for that phone call, the yes or no phone call. You're sitting there waiting, and you're waiting. Next thing I know, there's nobody calling. Like, you just call me and tell me that I didn't get it. Don't send me an email. Call, pick up the phone, and say, you know, I didn't get it. So this one particular school district I just got finished interviewing with, and I still haven't heard from. So I'm sitting there waiting there, and I was like, should I be taking this personal that these places are not calling or might send an email that says thanks or no thanks or a letter?
I think you have every right to be a little upset with that. It's common courtesy. We talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. And not even an email, call.
Right. Do you think it's a little soft statement of these corporations and these companies that don't call and say that, hey, you're just not the fit for us?
Absolutely. You got to be honest with people. You know, you got to stand behind what you're selling. So you can also help the person understand why, provide them a little input on why we're not working.
I don't know. Maybe I'm a little petty, too, because, like, sometimes with the Empowerment Perspective Group, I got to cold email people or send out, you know, we want to get some advertisings and all that other stuff, and no one answers my email sometimes, right? So I'm like, why? Like, at least send me something. Like, I'm not interested. It's not a good look for us. Like, they just completely blow it off. Is that being petty on my part?
they might get a lot of different opportunities, emailing them for stuff like that. But for a job interview and you went and sat with them and talked to them, I think they should at least call you to say yes, no, and like he said, maybe get a little feedback as to why you weren't the right fit.
I think they should tell you right off the bat from the interview. Like, don't waste my time. When you've done an interview, just be like, all right, step out for a second. To come back
instant response?
Right, absolutely. Like, you don't.
It's a little risky.
I remember taking my GREs, right, and you do it on a computer, and you got your responses right away. Like, why can't you just go in the interview and be like, all right, step out for a minute. Mr. Josie, this ain't going to work. Like, why you going to make me wait for, like, 2-3 weeks?
You know, it's funny what you just said. My son's aspirations to go to the University of Miami. Football, right? So what I've done, every time Coach Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator for Miami, tweets, I get an alert. So every time he tweets, I send him my son's huddle. I still haven't got a response yet, so I'm being petty.
Listen,
too.
That's a little stalkerish, though.
That's still what you got to do for your kid. Absolutely. You're getting him out there.
Now he's looking at David like, God, Wright's a little crazy. But on the previous show, we had the Women's World episode. How did you think that was?
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. I got a lot of feedback from it, and I got to be honest. A lot of the feedback said the women were not being 100% real.
You weren't being real?
No. Especially about the guy coming in late.
I'm fine with mine coming in late as long as he touches base.
I don't believe that. I don't think all the women on that show was being real in terms of certain things. Like, I'm going to get a mouthful when I walk in that door, or at least the next day for sure.
John doesn't go out a lot, so usually if he goes out with his friends, it's a few hours. If he's going out at 6 o'clock, usually home by 10, 11 o'clock, whatever. But if he's going to be out till 4 because they decide to go do something else, just text me and let me know you're okay.
What
I'm not going to be
mad. Married man is out till 4 o'clock in the morning.
He's not. So maybe it's not an issue for me. Maybe I'm being honest, but it's not. It's a non-issue in our marriage. He doesn't go out that late. But if he did, I would hope that he will call and say, I'm okay. We're heading somewhere else.
I don't know, man. I kind of think that you guys were holding back a little bit on the show.
I wasn't.
I don't know. That's not what the people are saying.
All right.
You need to dig a little deeper. That's what they're saying.
We'll have to bring the ladies back again and get some more questions going.
So, Damon, I'm going to ask you, what time is too late for you to come home? That it doesn't even make sense.
Son's eyebrows just went up, by the way, too.
I always try to communicate. You know, I'm going to be late and try to give at least a roundabout time when I'm going to be home, especially beyond 10 p.m.
Makes sense to me. I ain't calling. I'll just take the beating when I get home. I'm going to get in trouble anyway. So I'm about to not even call. No, I don't do that. So we're about to go to a commercial break. On the flip side of this break, we have on the lines calling in from Last Chance U, the one and only Brittany Wagner and her 10,000 pencils. So if you are a Netflix fan and you watched Last Chance U, the counselor that's on there, we're going to start talking about how to prepare our student athletes for this upcoming school year for high school and college students. So until after this commercial break, stay empowered.
Hi, I'm Gary Monteroso, and I just love the sound of beer being poured into a glass. If you also enjoy a cold brew, then join Tara Nurin and me every week for What's on Tap. We'll bring you tasting reviews, some of the top personalities in the beverage world, and much more. Saturdays at 1 p.m. on 99.9 FM, 1240 AM, and online at snjtoday.com.
A Healthier You is brought to you by Inspira Health Network, inspiring medicine.
Hi, I'm Ayla Gentiletti, your nutrition expert. Pulses, part of the legume family, are one of the top food trends of 2018. Pulses include several beans and peas, as well as chickpeas and lentils. They are a great source of lean protein, fiber, potassium, folate, and iron. Because of their nutritional composition, pulses have been shown to reduce the risk of diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. Additionally, in a 2016 study, pulses were linked to weight loss in participants who consumed at least 3/4 cup every day. Because of their fiber content, they help you feel fuller longer. Pulses like canned beans are a quick, easy, and cheap source of protein for lunches and dinners. Black beans can be added to tacos, cannellini beans go great with whole wheat pasta, and chickpeas make a tasty salad topping.
A Healthier You is brought to you by Inspira Health Network, inspiring medicine.
All All right. Welcome back to the Empowerment Perspective Radio Show. As I mentioned before, we're talking about sports today and student athletes. We have a high school basketball coach, somebody I've worked with for many years. Right, Joe? It's been a long time, right?
Yeah, I would say 17 years ago.
We had some ups and downs and things of that nature, with the seasons and things of that nature down there in Hamilton.
Yeah, so, I'm a boys basketball coach, been there for 18 years, coaching basketball probably for about 27 years. I was an assistant coach, it was at the college level. I'm also a guidance counselor, so I kind of mixed the two together, and, we've stayed in touch over the years, even when you left us,
mm-hmm.
and tried to keep the MISO on staff as my assistant coach, and, I'm happy to be here and give some advice today if you need it.
Got you. Now, you talked about being a guidance counselor and a basketball coach. How do those two worlds kind of exist together?
Yeah, so you have the academic piece and you have the athletic piece. So I'm both of those. I'm a guidance counselor. I'm always a guidance counselor first, even when I talk to my student athletes, because it's really important for them to do really well in school, make sure they're on the right track, and then, we could talk sports second. And that's just the way I approach my profession.
Got you. I understand. So the season's about to start. Sports are about to start as far as football in school and things in the student and athlete combination. What advice would you give parents to preparing their students or their children for the season and being a student athlete?
Yeah, in general, I think, we have these incoming freshmen. They have to know what academic track to be on. Make sure that they're taking a college prep curriculum or higher, an honors. And AP classes are great, but make sure you don't bite off more than you can chew.
Mm-hmm.
So you might need to monitor that, especially incoming freshmen. So that's where we start with, the coursework. And then getting ready for the SATs and the ACTs. I'm sorry, but that's still utilized by the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to get ready for those at the right time. You don't want to take them too early. And you can take them multiple times, but it's real important to get ready for those. Talk to your guidance counselor at school. They'll be a big help in that department. And then, as far as the sports go, let's get to the sports part of it. Know your level. Make sure if your son or daughter is bordering on the Division I. There's certain levels of Division I, Division II, Division III. Those are things that some parents may not know. Some of us know because we've been involved in sports, but others don't know, and they might have a really good athlete, a son or daughter who is teetering on possibly being a Division I athlete.
Mm.
So I would say know your level, ask your coach, and if you don't like your coach, you still got to ask them because they'll be brutally honest with you. I hope they would be. So make sure you're doing that. I wouldn't get too involved in the recruiting services. I think, the most important thing is kids can actually get involved in the process themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And by calling the coach, by interacting with the coaches that they want to attend that college or university. Coaches really respect that. As a former college coach, I know I really respected when a kid called. Back then, we didn't even have email when I was coaching at Millersville back in 95, 96. I think we just started with email.
Right.
So, but yeah, I definitely would encourage the kids to be a part of that process. Don't let their parents just do everything.
Hmm.
Real important. Because every coach hears the parents say that their son is great or their daughter is great. So, they want to see something else there.
Now, Thamen, your son is here, and I know he's getting ready to go through probably the recruiting process. You talked about Miami. How involved are you, other than stalking the coach, how involved are you in that process?
I'm heavily involved. I've been involved from the beginning, part of his development. I find the camps. I learned over the years, this is probably our third year, going to different universities, camps and stuff like that. To only go to the ones that's showing interest,
mm-hmm.
Not just pick the random ones, because it's very hard for them to practice or not videoed or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So if you don't catch a coach's eye, it's going to be difficult to kind of make that connection.
Right.
So we go to the places that they show interest and we feel that we have mutual interest in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Got you. So your son is on right now. We have him on a show, and he went to, obviously he's going to Delsey Regional High School, where we all come from. Mm-hmm. How awesome is it to see your son playing, especially the position that you're playing and
right.
winning championships? How awesome is that as a parent?
it's like one of the greatest feelings for me. And I've said this to him. I said, when he's out there playing, I'm out there playing with you mentally. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, not that I'm going to relive in my life, but it's like, it's just really more gratifying to see him homegrown and experiencing similar things with the coaches and just the school environment, everything. Because, you know, Dusty's really good at education and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's getting all the proper tools he needs, and it's good to see it coming from home, you know?
Right, right, right. Now, you were part of the championship team last year, correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, so how does it feel to be a part of a winning tradition and a winning program such as Dusty?
It feels good because, you know, we've won 4 years in a row. We've been there 6 times in a row to be a part of one of those championships. It feels good because, like, the first year, my cousin Tyrone was there. So, you know, it feels good that, you know, have a ring. We can shoot each other our rings and stuff.
Now, do you, because I know your dad doesn't have one. Do y'all go back and forth all the time about, you know, how he doesn't have a ring? You could be honest. I would be like, talk all that trash, you ain't got a ring.
He's jealous, though. He can't fit the ring.
I understand.
We're partners.
You're partners.
We don't have no adversarial type stuff.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
We're partners.
So how do you, going into the season, you're going to be a junior this year, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So going into your junior year, which is a big year academically and from a sports perspective, how do you prepare going into this year? Do you do anything different than you have done in the past?
I tried to, like, lift harder and, like, you know, make sure I got my grades up because my freshman year, my grades wasn't as good as they were before. Mm-hmm. But after the sophomore season, going into the junior year, I really got my grades up. I had a lot of A's. And with the lifting and practicing stuff, I just try to take it to another level.
Got you. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit. Now, Stacy, you said you played a little ball.
Yeah, I played for Dulcie. I played softball.
Softball.
Field hockey.
Yes, a bunch of Dulcie alum in the building right now. What, growing up, what did sports mean to you?
I've always liked sports. I've always been a lifelong Phillies fan, lifelong Eagles fan. Playing sports was more fun for me because I guess as a girl, I didn't really see an opportunity as I got older to continue unless it was like the slow pitch softball leagues, stuff like that. So I did it more to have fun. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking to go play professional field hockey. It wasn't an option. It still isn't an option, I don't think. I'm not sure.
There's always an option.
Always.
Always an option.
I played more for fun.
Got you. I understand. Now, Damon, you were playing sports, obviously, your whole entire life. What role did it play in your life?
Especially football. It means everything. You know, character building, learning how to work with others, being on time. It's like everything in my life, I pretty much got from football.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled somewhat academically initially, transferred a few times to college and everything, but football always kind of grounded my life and kept me going in the right direction.
Gotcha.
So pretty much owe everything to football.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me. John, Joe, I want to go back to you, and you talk about parents should know the right level that their kids are capable of playing on. As a parent, how do I figure that out?
Yeah, so I really think that it is a hard question, and at all the sports, if you think about it, you know, when you don't know, you have to kind of sometimes rely on the recruiting services sometimes to get out there, or you have to ask your coach. And sometimes you just have to know by playing in these certain venues. Talk about AAU basketball or these camps, prospect camps. And sometimes that can give you a good idea. And I think there's a lot of that going on now in all the sports.
Mm-hmm.
So that does help the parents. With regard to that, especially if they don't have that much experience.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's real important to, you know, try to find the right level. You might have a student athlete that can play low Division I or mid-major, but they might just be a role player. Some kids may want to play Division II and be a full-time player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can give you an example. Christian Mortley, who's one of our former players, he could have played Division I and sat on the bench. And he probably wouldn't have played much.
Right.
But he wound up playing at Bloomsburg University, all-time leading scorer, and is now in a tryout overseas in Lithuania, I believe. Had an excellent career. Found the right school, right fit, right level.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the option to go 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
So, perfect example.
Do you find yourself, like, frustrated with parents a lot? Because, like, you know, sometimes they have a really large expectation of their child, and like you're like, you know what, they're not really that. You know, like, how do you, like, even manage that situation? Because, like, I always tell people, like, you know what? Go out to one of these D1 schools. It don't even have to be, like, Nebraska, Ohio State, or anything like that. Go to, like, Rutgers. Or even go to a D2 school, like Indiana, Pennsylvania, or something like that. And you go out there, you tell me if your son can play. Because I don't think people really grasp the physicality, the size, and the, you know what I mean? Like, the physicality of college football. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's true. If I think back in my 18 years in Hamilton, I haven't coached a Division I athlete. Mm. And that's not a knock on me as the coach. DeMiso knows I'm not that bad, right? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, people really don't realize.
Right.
And sometimes they need to see that. And just to your point is how I may, you know, recommend that if I get a little frustrated. But I try to, you know, I try to balance it and try to put it in perspective. It is an education to go through that process, and sometimes it could be disheartening to know that they might be on a three level and not what you thought. And sometimes the coaches, they make mistakes too, so it can go the other way. But you know, I would focus more on trying to find the right fit for your son or daughter, and then I try to help the parents out as much as I can by making phone calls to the coaches that I know. And saying, okay, here's some film, you know, and sometimes I'll get some feedback from the other coaches because sometimes I'm not sure if they're what level it is.
You know, it's funny you say because I do that sometimes. Like, I'll send my son's huddle out to some of my friends and say, you know what, check him out. Tell me what you think because I want perspective. I mean, am I blowing him up more than what he really is, you know? But so it's always getting that feedback from people, you know, because, like, I have some few mutual friends or, like, my one buddy played at Penn State and he's got a shot the league and everything, and we have a mutual friend who has a son that's offensive lineman. He was like, what do you think of him? He said, you know, hey, this person said that, yeah, he could be a D1 prospect. So I took a look. I was like, nah, he's a D2 kid.
Yeah.
Which is not
right.
Bad.
No, no.
Not at all.
Not at all.
And that doesn't mean that football ends there for you because there's kids that make it through there.
Right. And it's a good point with the film. In basketball, it's probably a little different than football because the coach is going to sit through a whole football game. But in basketball, some of the college coaches will want a full game film.
Right.
And if I say I have some film, they'll say, don't send me highlights. Right. You know, that's the thing. Now, don't send me the highlights.
Same
everybody
football.
Looks – even DeMiso Josie's going to look good in the highlight. You know what I'm saying? So, at the end of the day, I think that's probably the most important thing is to figure that out, get it bound. And I said earlier, you know, the get your son or daughter involved in that process.
Right.
They really appreciate that.
Right.
The coaches really they like that.
I was actually talking to Nebraska about my son recently, and I said, go look at the game film because the highlights don't give you perspective because he's making plays when it matters, you know? Like, he's got this – I kind of had it too, but he's got this real crazy ability to knock the ball out. Yeah. It looks really like – it's crazy, and it's like – I'll go to the sidelines, and he'll tell you, like, I'll say, it's time. Yeah. And then the next series, that ball's getting popped out, and he's got it. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah.
So
as I promised, we have on the line Miss Brittany Wagner. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And Miss Brittany Wagner is from the Netflix series Last Chance U. She now has her own organization, 10,000 Pencils. She's a phenomenal counselor, speaker. I've watched a couple of your things on YouTube, so you know, I think I have at least know a little bit about you. So let's talk about your organization, 10,000 Pencils. Like, why did you decide to start that organization?
I mean, I don't know that I ever dreamed of doing it or that I ever really had a thought of doing it. When I left East Mississippi, I didn't really have a plan. I just knew it was time for me to go. And I was in a coffee shop and talking to two men that were fans of the show, and one of them, I didn't know at the time, but he was a small business consultant, and he said, you know, why don't you do this on your own? Like, why don't you start your own company? And I looked at him like he was crazy, and I said, because I don't have any clue how to do that. I'm not a business person, you know, and I don't know how to start a company. And he said, well, but you have the platform and you know what you're doing and you're really good at your job and you don't have to work for an institution to do it. You can do this on your own. And so from that moment forward, we kind of started brainstorming about what a company would look like. bike and came up with 10,000 pencils and kind of came up with the business plan surrounding it. And I think the beauty of it was that I never really thought about it. I just went with it. And it's grown and it's changed. I mean, what we first envisioned, it's kind of changed from what we first envisioned, but it's going strong. And I'm really happy that I went to that coffee shop that morning and that I entertained that man's advice.
Yeah. Stacey, I see you smiling over there. Is there a reason why you're smiling, Stacey?
That's why I'm with you now. If I would have said, let me think about it for a little bit and join in this, I would have talked myself out of it. So it's kind of, you need to pull the trigger sometimes and not think it all the way through. You don't need to know every step of the way. You just need to start.
Right. I feel like if you have your skills and you have, not necessarily a plan, but you believe in yourself, you should be able to do almost anything that you want to set out to. And I tell people a lot that your goal may not be the same and the vision may not be what you initially set out to. So it might take you somewhere completely different. Like, I had no idea we were going to be on the radio.
I was going to say radio.
Right. So I was thinking, we're going to speak all over the country and that would be it. So, we kind of share the same story. Now, on the show, you talked about, do you have your pencil? And you're always on these guys about having pencils. Is that where the title of your organization comes from?
Yeah, and that really came from fans of the show, honestly. The thing about scuba that I don't know that a lot of fans really have swallowed is that it was 40 miles away from really any kind of civilization. So 40 miles from the nearest Walmart, there was literally nothing in that town. And we had a lot of guys that would come, they came into college with nothing. I mean, it was nothing, but it was everything they had. And, no one took them school supplies shopping. I mean, no one was really involved in their academic side of their life. And so they would show up to school and they're doing the best that they can, but they don't have a pencil, And it was really that simple, as they just didn't have a pencil. And, I think I went to college with a U-Haul. So, I had this notion going into the job, I think, that everyone came from the same situation I did. And I quickly learned that's very false. And I just decided, this is not that big of a deal. I mean, I could be a part of their solution or I could be a bit part of their problem. And I would go to Dollar General and I would buy about $30 a month in number two yellow pencils. And I just had them in my office because I had paper, I had notebooks, I would get old backpacks from people who didn't want them anymore. And I just started having school supplies in my office because I realized that there were so many of these young men who just, they didn't have it. And yet we expected them to perform at the same academic level as those of us who had every resource we needed available to us. And I didn't think that was fair. So I started just handing out pencils. And then the fans of the show really kind of formed the whole, do you have a pencil hashtag, and kind of started pushing it. And from that moment, I really thought about, the pencil really signifying more than just the fact that it was a writing utensil. I mean, it kind of symbolized opportunity for me, and the opportunity maybe that you're giving someone by just simply handing them a pencil. And we just kind of morphed it into the whole 10,000 pencils. I kind of took it from Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers book, where he talks about 10,000 hours of effort. And I thought about, it is 10,000 hours of effort, and it's 10,000 athletes, and it's 10,000, pencils that I've handed out. And we just, that's how we came up with 10,000 pencils.
I can definitely feel your passion and hear your passion for these students. Like, where did that come from? I believe your father was a psychologist, correct? And your mother, I believe, was a teacher or a counselor of some sort?
Yeah, I think a lot of it simply came from growing up in Mississippi. We're the poorest state in the country. We're the most rural state in the country. We're the least educated state in the country. But we're a great state. We're also the most giving state in the country per capita. And I think it came from growing up in that environment. My dad always made sure that we were aware of people around us and aware that everyone didn't live like us. Everyone didn't come from the same situations and life circumstances that we came from. Both my parents, my mom working in special education, she made sure that we were very aware that, that people have disabilities and everyone's dealing with their own issues, and they're all okay. There's nothing wrong with any of us and the issues that we're dealing with. And I think they instilled that with in us at a very young age. My earliest memory of really being concerned about a peer was fourth grade. I remember really being concerned about a little boy that was in my class and the fact that he never brought a lunch, he never ate lunch, he you know, and I started bringing him lunch money and started bringing him school supplies and started helping him study. And I just had this concern. And, you know, I think, yes, it came from my parents. It came from my upbringing. I also think some of it is just something that came from something bigger than myself. You know, and I think some of this is not has nothing to do with me, honestly. And I think we can all have that quality, even if we weren't born with it or we didn't have the upbringing that I had. I think we can all have that quality if we'll just start being aware of other people around us and having some tolerance for what other people have gone through.
Right. Now, watching the show, you were dealing with a lot of difficult student athletes that come from different backgrounds. A lot of them suffered, I guess you could say, trauma. How big a role did mental health, does mental health play in student athletes, especially at that level?
I think it could play a big part. I think that that's the area of college athletics that we want to ignore. We want these guys and girls to perform at a high level athletically. We want them to perform at a level academically that we think is, you know, acceptable. And then we want to ignore all of the mental health issues that they bring to the table. And I think that's unfortunate. I think that's the thing that we're missing in college athletics and probably now professional sports as well, is that we're ignoring the whole person and we're really ignoring the psychological baggage that just that pressure puts on these kids, with the life situations that they've been through already, the pressure and psychological damage that's been done to them already. You know, I think that that's something. I don't know that I was really sitting at my desk focusing on labeling them and labeling, you know, the mental health issues that they may or may not have. I think I was just more paying attention to them as people, as human beings, and what they were bringing to the table every single moment that they were in front of me. And I think that's really important, to just focus on them as people and, you know, what are you going through at this moment and helping them get through that moment, you know, one moment at a time.
Right. Now, Eamon, I see you clapping over there when she said, you know, seeing them as people. Is that something that resonates with you?
Absolutely. I mean, I even recently had an issue with a coach, like, referring to my son as cattle.
Hmm.
And talked about breaking him and using terms like that. Some people don't see these kids as people.
They're product.
Yeah.
They're bringing in the money. Yeah. That's all they want them for, is to perform.
I've been working with March for Our Lives with David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. One of their security detail, and they've been talking about a lot of the inequities in impoverished areas with the education system. You know, they would go to, you know, affluent areas in Chicago, and kids have iPads and Apple computers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they go into an impoverished area with a lot of people of color, and they don't have pencils and pens and mm-hmm. notebooks and right. books. You know, the things you need. It's not that they can't learn. They're not provided the resources
to be able to do that. I completely get it. Now, Brittany, I know you are, I guess, focused on the mindset and changing the mindset of these student athletes. How do I, as a counselor, as a parent, I have a child or a student that has that sense of entitlement. I mean, everyone's been telling them that their greatest thing on you know, since sliced bread and everything has been given. And we had conversations about, you know, this trophy generation, everyone gets a trophy. How do I change the mindset of these student athletes so that education is a priority? Because at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to play ball forever. Like, how do I change that, go about changing that mindset?
You know, yeah, I think first of all, we as the adults in the room have to accept everyone's academic level. You know, I have a best friend the other day. We were having a conversation, and she said, you know, I just have to accept the fact that my daughter is not going to be a straight-A student. Like, that's just not who she is. She's really good at other things, and academics are hard for her, and she quite possibly may be a C student, and that's okay. You know, and I think one of the things is we want our children to be like us, or we want them to be better than us, but in the same pathway that, you know, we want our children to go, and I think we have to accept them for who they are. And, you know, some kids, academics just isn't their thing, and that's okay. Now, it doesn't mean that they, you know, don't need to apply themselves in that area, but it may mean that they're not going to be that 3.5, 3.0 student. It's harder for them, and there's a struggle there, and I think we have to quit pushing for perfection and just accept accept them for the areas that they are good in. You know, let's look at what they are, what are their strengths, and quit focusing on the weaknesses. I think the other thing is that, you know, there is this sense of entitlement these days, and everybody gets a ribbon, and I think there's a little bit of goodness in that. I think there's also a whole lot of not, you know, negativity in that mentality, that life's just going to be easy and everybody's always going to like me type of thing. I'm going to be good at everything, because that's not reality. I think in the things that, you know, with academics, for me, it was about creating small successes. If I had a student that was struggling, a Ronald Ollie that was struggling, and he wasn't comfortable in the classroom, he didn't believe in himself academically, it was manufacturing a moment where he could say, oh, you know, maybe I can do this. Like, maybe I am smart. You know, and teaching him in the same way that we teach kids on a football field. You know, everybody walks out on that football field. I always tell the story of being at, you know, you're at an Alabama practice and you have five-star athletes all over the place. And every single one of the freshmen out there is mentally telling themselves, oh, my gosh, I'm not good enough to be here. What if I can't do this? What if I'm, you know, what if I shouldn't have gone here? And they're all having this negative talk in their head because it's intimidating to be out there until they catch that first pass, you know, or until they get that first tackle. And then they go, okay, maybe I am good enough. It's the same mentality in the classroom. You know, most of those kids are doubting themselves until they have their first successful moment. The problem is we don't give it to them because we expect perfection. And so, you know, rather than giving them a successful moment right off the bat, we're telling them basically that they're not good enough by saying, why don't you have a pencil? Why don't you sit on the front row? Can't you sit still for 8 hours? Why didn't you turn your paper in? You know, why didn't you use punctuation? Like, we're constantly beating them down rather than giving them a moment where they go, oh, maybe I can do this. You know, and I think that's really important when you're trying to, it's motivation. When you're trying to get someone to want to do something, you have to show them the light, like show them the why. And nagging them or beating them down is not showing them the why. Beating them down is showing them, you know, that they're not good enough and that they're not going to be successful in it, so why try? I just think that's really important, especially when dealing with a lot of low socioeconomic students who just haven't had that success. They don't have the support. They don't have the cheerleaders in their corner. They don't believe in themselves. I think it's really important to manufacture a successful moment.
Now, do you have a toolbox that you go to? Like, you know, in mental health, we always talk about, like, if you go to the front door and it's locked, you try the back door. And if the back door is locked, then you try a window. Like, you know, like, sometimes in public schools and stuff like that, they try to mold everyone into the same person and don't try different avenues to try to reach the child.
Yeah, I think you definitely have to have different methods. For me, it was, I'm not a labeler, so I tried my best not to really look at transcripts real hard, or I never Googled a player. I didn't want to know, you know, like Dakota Allen. Dakota went through, I didn't know what Dakota Allen had done. Now, I knew that he had spent some time in jail, obviously, because we talked about it, but I never knew that it was an armed robbery charge. I never knew the story until after he was gone. Same with every athlete, you know, that we had. I didn't want to know coming in because I didn't want to have preconceived notions. I didn't want to label them. You know, I think people live up to their label. So when you constantly, you know, are labeling something, you tell a five-year-old they have ADHD, they just created a kid with ADHD. So I think, you know, I'm not a fan of labeling. But what I would I would look at transcripts, I would look at the data that I had in front of me, and then I would kind of go, okay, whatever, you know, put it away and move on. And I felt like it was important to kind of get to know every student. I learned really quickly, you know, with certain, I started to see the pattern. I started to learn that guys that had been abandoned most of the time didn't respond very well to yelling. They didn't respond to getting kicked out of situations because that just felt like abandonment again. So I started learning, and that was how I think I connected so well so quickly with Ronald Ollie, is I knew that there was an abandonment issue there, and so I knew no matter what he did, I had to stick with him. Like, I could never show him my my frustration or wanting to give up. Even if there were moments where I wanted to, I could not let him see that in me.
Trust.
I knew that was huge for him. And so I think, you know, DJ Law was another guy I think that you couldn't really yell at. If you yelled at him, he just shut down. You know, there were different, and then there were some kids that the only way they were going to respond to you is if you got in their face, you know, and yelled at them. That was just all that was going to get their attention. So I think the key there was knowing who you were working with. And sometimes, you know, it took me a while to figure people out. Sometimes I could peg them, you know, on the first meeting with them. And the thing that I think the adults in the room, we fail the students on is that's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot more work to get to know everyone individually and kind of have an individual plan for everybody. It's a lot easier to just put everybody in a category or a label, which is what I think we now do in public education. It's so much easier to just label people and go, okay, well, you're in this group, you're in this group, you're in this group, and then we teach to the group, rather than get to know everyone individually. And I've said it to a lot of adults that when I've spoken to teachers and administrators, I've said, you know, we need to start earning our paycheck. And to earn your paycheck, you have to get in the face of your students and start knowing them on an individual level.
That's so true. Well, Brittany, if you could stay, hang around, we have to take this quick commercial break. If you're able to stay around for a little bit. And on the flip side, we'll have some more of Brittany Wagner. Mr. Petty just walked into the building, too, so we're going to find out why he was so late. So stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Gary Monteroso, and I just love the sound of beer being poured into a glass. If you also enjoy a cold brew, then join Tara Nurin and me every week for What's on Tap. We'll bring you tasting reviews, some of the top personalities in the beverage world, and much more. Saturdays at 1 p.m. on 99.9 FM, 1240 AM, and online at snjtoday.com.
A Healthier You is brought to you by Inspira Health Network, inspiring medicine.
Hi, I'm Ela Gentiletti, your nutrition expert. Pulses, part of the legume family, are one of the top food trends of 2018. Pulses include several beans and peas, as well as chickpeas and lentils. They are a great source of lean protein, fiber, potassium, folate, and iron. Because of their nutritional composition, pulses have been shown to reduce the risk of diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. Additionally, in a 2016 study, pulses were linked to weight loss in participants who consumed at least 3/4 cup every day. Because of their fiber content, they help you feel fuller longer. Pulses like canned beans are a quick, easy, and cheap source of protein for lunches and dinners. Black beans can be added to tacos, cannellini beans go great with whole wheat pasta, and chickpeas make a tasty salad topping.
A Healthier You is brought to you by Inspira Health Network, inspiring medicine.
All right, welcome back to the Empowerment Perspective Radio Show. I am Demiso Josie. Mr. Petty has walked in the building.
Yes, I'm here.
How you
finally,
doing,
I'm
sir?
Here. I'm doing well. Took a little time for me to get here, but I'm here.
Uh-huh. I thought Rachel from the last show had, not Rachel, Rosie from the last show had scared you off. She was going at your neck a little bit. I thought she was a little afraid to come in today.
She tried. But my playlist is really, really thick. And it takes, you know, a lot more than that. Keep me away.
I understand. We are on the phone with Brittany Wagner from 10,000 Pencils and the Netflix series Last Chance U. We're talking about student athletes and, you know, schools around the corner. Camp is about to open up. We want to get these students ready and prepared, and more importantly, the parents prepared to be able to help their children. And teachers, obviously, and educators need to be able to do those things. Now, Mr. Petty, you did have a question that you wanted to ask Brittany about the two young men that were arrested in the show.
Yeah, my heart goes out to those two guys. I mean, I watched the first season, I watched the second season, and those guys, you know, really had a heart and passion for playing football. What they didn't really, you know, like too much was actually the academic side. Do you think that because of the economic factors that was in their lives, you think that attributed to them actually being involved in the incident they got involved in?
I think there were a lot of things that contributed to that. I don't know if you've seen season 3 yet, but at the end of season 3, there's a bonus episode. It's called Life After, and that episode is a follow-up to myself, Ronald Ollie, Dakota Allen, and also shows you Isaiah Wright and where he kind of is now in that situation. to their lives. I think more importantly than that, I think the foster care system really contributed to that. I mean, they were in foster care situations for about 7 years of their lives. You know, you saw on the show where Camion, the older brother, who was only, I think, 2 years, maybe 3 years older than Isaiah, was basically, had become the parent of all of these kids. There were seven of them total. You know, and he was taking them, getting them ready for school, and really trying to figure out how he was going to feed them. They had lots of years where they didn't know where their next meal was coming from, and would go through Walmart and just steal chicken, you know, and eat it in the store real quick, just so they could eat. And, I mean, I can't imagine going through that as a small child and just having adult after adult after adult fail you. Hmm. I think they had because of that, and then when they were in the foster care system, they had some very negative experiences as foster children. I think going through that, I think that experience really impacted them because it impacted their ability to take authority. I mean, they just not trust adults. I mean, and rightly so, because every adult that had been in their lives thus far had pretty much failed them, and so they really had this mentality that they had to take care of themselves and did not respect or trust authority figures. And I think you saw some of that in the show, and then you also kind of saw in the show where some of the adults, even, you know, at East Mississippi, failed them in some ways. And you know, I think that's just, when you're dealing with that type of student, I think you have to be very sensitive to the issues that they're bringing in. You know, my heart breaks for everyone involved in that situation, for Isaiah Camion, and then also the young man that was killed. And it's a terrible thing. I think that we as adults, you know, really need to learn from his story and learn that there are children like this in our schools. And, you know, I often think about Isaiah as a young kid, and I think, you know, could there have been a teacher or a coach or an administrator or some adult in his life that could have changed the situation for him if we had just maybe paid a little bit more attention?
Now, Coach Martino, at the high school level, are you experiencing some of these cases as a coach and as a counselor?
Yes. It's overwhelming, to say the least. And as I have the kids, whether they're athletes or not, coming in as a guidance counselor, they're coming in with a lot of issues and problems that deal strictly, you know, it could be anxiety, it could be what's going on at home, it could be a chemical imbalance. There could be a lot of things that are going on that these kids can't quite identify. And, you know, it's getting back to what someone said earlier about a teacher trying to get in there and try to get the kid, know the kids a little bit better, and it's not just about academics. We're missing it at the high school level, big time. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not teaching enough character, we're not teaching enough things that can help these kids go to the next level. And it, you know, when I talk about, you know, performance enhancement and all those things that nobody really touches on, you know, being, when we talk about counseling, so giving these kids something, we don't do it at the high school level. The coaches aren't doing it. They're focused on, you know, winning games, even at our level. So, you know, when we talk about the counseling part, I need help. You know, I'm in there and I'm dying for a counseling center at the high school. We don't have one.
Right.
I'm a guidance counselor handling testing, handling personal problems, I'm handling grades, I'm handling all these issues, but I don't have a counseling center. Where right. Some schools do, some don't, and it comes down to money. I can't reach all these kids,
right.
And it's so frustrating.
On my high school experience as a player, and you know, the story that I grew up, you know, an abusive family and all that stuff. Sports was my outlet, but outside of that, like, I didn't have, you know, another outlet. So when you remove that, you know, these kids went home when this happened. You know, you remove that outlet for them. You know, they're looking for that release. So you find situations where, you know, get caught up in, you know, unfortunate situations that these two young men went through.
Yeah.
So
we're worried too much about the academics. Don't get me wrong, I'm an academic person, but we're worried too much about, you know, physics and algebra 2 and all this other stuff, when these kids, they need so much more than that, and we're not giving it to them. The curriculum's not there. It's not there. And I've been crying for high schools to do more and change, and you know, I can only do so much as a guidance counselor.
You got to deal with the whole person.
Yes.
You know, like what I do, you know, sometimes someone might have a crisis situation, they get admitted to the hospital, and then they get discharged out to the community, and it's like, well, I'm hungry, I don't have clothes. Mm-hmm. How can I worry about going to treatment, you know what I mean, when I'm hungry?
I'm hungry, right.
You know? So it's those kind of stories with the kids as well. Like, you realize, like, oh, my God, you go in the kitchen house, it's like, oh, my God, there's nothing to eat, you know what I mean? Like, he's barely being clothed, you know, he's sharing clothes with his brother and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just his self-esteem and just, like, seeing other kids, you know, with stuff. And, like, it's
bothersome. I often thought about having my own high school and trying to invent a curriculum that incorporates this a big time, you know, with the help of a lot of people, obviously. But that would be ideal, and I think it's what we
need. Well, I think that programs such as Brittany's, the 10,000 Pencils, and what we're doing with the Empowerment Perspective Group is trying to fill those holes and those voids. I mean, obviously, the issue is larger than what we can handle, but we need more people, we need more organizations to be able to you know, step in and fill in those gaps and fill in those holes. Again, I tell my students all the time, I don't care less if you could add 1 + 1. It's irrelevant to me. Now, tell me how you solved that problem, and, you know, we can wire your brain to solve problems. So now when you're putting the situations out into society, you know how to handle those situations. I think that's a big lesson that a lot of educators need to be able to teach these kids. A lot of parents also need to start stepping up. You guys are not excluded from this conversation. Parents, you need to step up and raise your children. And don't put yourself in a situation where you're requiring the school to raise your kids. I don't need school to raise my kids. I have to go to, you know, to teach my kids. They have to go to school because it's the law. But at the end of the day, I don't need them. Like, me and my wife are working with our children constantly, you know, and we're putting them in situations where they got to make decisions and they have to figure certain things out. So that's extremely, extremely important. Yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit because we've got like 10 minutes left in the show, and Mr. Petty made it all the way down here on time, so I have to allow him space to ask his traditional question of pettiness. So go ahead, sir.
So, Ms. Brittany and everyone that's here, I mean, are you guys petty?
I mean, you know, I never really thought about it until I was reading the list of questions, and I was like, gosh,
I'll say
maybe
this.
I am petty.
Yeah, I'll say this, that after watching, you know, season one and season two, you know, I always seem to get like a hint of your pettiness when people come ask you for a pencil. You'll have a look on your face like, how dare you come to an academic campus and not have a pencil?
I don't know. You know, that probably came from, like, I would challenge them to keep up with the same pencil for more than 5 minutes. And, you know, so 10 minutes later when they were coming and asking for another pencil, I was like, really?
Yes, I see a look all over your face.
Okay, let's go there. I'm glad that you asked brought that in. Let's go there for a second, because we have a running question on this show, specifically about wedding rings.
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
So the question is, should the wedding rings cost the same, or should yours cost more than his?
Oh, mine should definitely cost more than his.
Here we go.
Why? So you're not even...
Walmart.
Okay, I listened to you guys.
She's waiting a minute. You
said Walmart?
Walmart.
Well, okay, well.
Mine needs to cost a lot.
All right, well, we have to know that, you know, because I listened on the way in that you in Mississippi, and I understand that Walmart is about 20 minutes or 40 minutes away from, and that may be a really important store. But here in Jersey, Walmart is not an important store to us at all. But I also heard you say that you wanted to make sure that as teachers and administrators and even parents, make sure that you are teaching to the whole child. How is it that you not even considering the fact of how your husband may feel about getting slighted by getting a ring from Walmart? I'm so unfair.
She don't have a husband.
Let's check that.
Well, listen, just make sure you call us for...
Because he hasn't presented me with a ring. There we go.
He's going to be on next week's show. Where is the ring? That is too funny.
I told my wife to get it from a gum machine because I ain't going to wear it anyway. I hate jewelry.
That's an issue with me. Men not
said that's petty.
That's punishment. I hate jewelry. I won't even wear a watch.
That is too funny. So we switch gears a little bit, and we talk about if the world is about to end, you can only take three albums with you. What three albums are you taking?
Okay, I'm taking Michael Jackson Thriller. Mm. I think you can't. You just have to include that. I'm taking, this is going to be funny, but Celine Dion.
Celine Dion. Well, Brittany, we thank you for your time and definitely giving us some great information for our audience out here. If people wanted to get in contact with you, how can they reach you?
My website's BrittanyWagger.com, and Twitter and Instagram handle is Brittany_MSGirl.
All right. So on behalf of the Empowerment Perspective Group, we thank you for being on and continuing your great work that you're doing out there, and we look forward to seeing you do wonderful things. And hopefully we'll work together someday on the Empowerment Perspective Group and 10,000 Pencils. We can talk about that all.
Wait a minute. One last question before you go. Do you do fantasy football? Because we want to invite you to our league.
Oh, my gosh. I would love to. I would love to.
Okay. Right. You're in.
You're in.
Nice.
So. Okay, good.
All right, Brittany. Thank you so
Where's
much.
Mine?
I didn't get an invite yet either.
Yeah.
We just started.
Okay.
So that was Brittany Wagner of Last Chance U. And she was a counselor. She's doing her own thing of 10,000 Pencils, doing some wonderful things down in Mississippi. She's also available for speaking engagements up here and working with your children. She does things with parents in school districts. So that's some wonderful work that she's doing out there. Just a reminder, we are at the Youth Empowerment Conference on August 18th. You want to tell the people what you will be speaking on, sir?
Oh, I guess I don't have a flyer in front of me, and this is the last second, but I do know that I'll be probably speaking about financial aid, more importantly, being able to empower yourself to ensure that you can take care of your business before you decide to let them take care of the business for you. College is very costly, and we want to make sure that our students get a jump on things very soon, because if you wait until your junior year, like the traditional wisdom is, you're going to miss out on a whole lot of things, especially mainly opportunities. So we'll be speaking. Shout out to Shalonda Austin again for arranging this thing and giving myself and Demisa the opportunity to speak to the youth of Atlantic City. So we're going to have some fun. We'll be down there.
All right. Coach Martino, any last words of wisdom, advice for our student athletes?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, he just hit on the, I didn't touch on the financial aid and making sure that, you know, you get involved in that early. There's plenty of money out there. And good grades, by the way, good grades could mean money. It does not sports. And getting your athletic scholarship, sometimes, you know, the grades and the GPA could mean a little bit of money.
Got you. So, Mr. Wright, I thank you for stepping in for Mr. Petty today. How was your first chance, time on the air?
I enjoyed myself. I really had a good time and feel empowered.
Now, if this was Rockefeller and I was Jay-Z, I would present you with the chain. So, but you are officially a member of the Empowerment Perspective Group, so welcome on that. Young Mr. Wright, good luck. Season coming up. You know who you guys open up with?
I think it's Woodbury.
Woodbury, all right.
Woodbury,
man.
Bro.
All right. Nah. Well, we need another ship. We need another championship. Bring it back home to Delsey. Make it back-to-back. That'd be like 20 or something like that. I don't know. I lost count. So, until next time, stay empowered.